Dave,
Chris, how's it going?
good man. We finally made it happen.
We did. That was a long journey.
Yeah, sorry about that. My availability is sparse to say the least, just given the current dynamics of my regular day job.
Does that extend into weekends
It
and
does. Yeah, we've been trying to finish up this green energy project and we're in the restoration phase of it now, which is like the reseeding after construction goes through, and that they're trying to expedite that phase. And so they're actually going to 7 days a week, and every once in a while I'll get a Sunday off. And so here
Oh
we
my
are.
gosh. So you're trying to cram all of it into that one day.
And hopefully at the end of this current project, I'll be able to take some time off and dedicate a little bit more time to accommodating people's specific desires. I've been getting a lot of emails lately about requests for different meetings, and
How does that feel to have people from around the world, or just that you've put these videos out? It must be strange to think you're attracting individuals. You don't know who they are. You don't know at what stage they are. You don't know what you're going to meet up with. Has that been difficult for you?
not at all. It's actually completely natural because I know what people fe are feeling. I know where it comes from. I know where those seeds sprout. I know how to be the garden in which those seeds sprout. So like there's a commonality in
Yeah.
our shared experience where I know exactly what people need. I know exactly what people are looking for because
Yeah.
I was the exact same way.
Yeah.
And when those things burn off, you kind of see how they arise and why they arise and what
Yeah.
specific conditions in which they arise. And you also see, how to quell those things, how to allow those things to kind of rest back into the place from which they came.
It's interesting because there's so much confusion before awakening, and then after awakening, there's an entirely new set of deep confusion that sets in, right? As the ego rears up what remains of it that demands to be heard, it demands to know, it demands to understand more, and co-opts that experience. And I certainly had that experience myself of finding myself stumbling towards enlightenment at the beginning, awakening, having no idea what that was supposed to look like, and in fact, not really recognizing that it had happened when it did happen. It seemed so ordinary and so simplistic, and I thought, this cannot be what has been written about in the 12,000 pages I have read on this subject. And then discovering, in fact, that it was that. And because it was not something that was so far away. In fact, it was so close. It was like driving a car where your windshield is so clean that you forget as you're looking out onto the mountains that you're looking through glass. And somebody says, that which is seen but not recognized, right? And you're saying, now somebody says to you, I need to point out where the windshield is. And you're looking and you're looking for that spot of dust or something that would allow you to recognize it. And you say, I can't see it. Somebody says, it's right there, right in front of your eyes. And you say, I still can't see it. And that's for me what made this process so difficult, not only to achieve, but then afterwards, how do you describe this? How do you point to something that everybody is seeing but not recognizing? Right. So for me, that's what that experience was. I've always been seeing what I'm trying to see, but somehow the brain is not recognizing it. And for me, it was within that one moment, a split second of, oh, there's a figure and a ground to consciousness, this phenomena. And then there's that from which that phenomena is. Oh, I've never really paid attention to the background. Oh, it's interesting. I can zoom in and out. I wonder what that means. That was the moment for me.
That's
Gosh,
so
it's interesting.
beautiful.
Oh, and it feels lovely to be in that space because the body is moving and the awareness is unchanging. And so this little body appears to be sort of walking within a much larger sense of self and a little trippy at the
There.
beginning, right?
Abs
You know
absolutely.
exactly what I'm talking about, right? And everything. It's like seeing your face in the mirror for the first time. You know, I was out down walking down the street and I'm touching branches and plants, and It's like you're touching yourself. I'm sure you know what I'm referencing, but it is a strange feeling to have the self having been confined within the mind and body and in this speck to all of a sudden go from small to limitless, small to huge, small to, and looking up saying, strangely, the planets and the sky and the cloud, everything can fit inside that awareness. Right. So all of a sudden, that was an extraordinarily beautiful time for me. Lots of bliss, joy, but then also very quickly devolved into what they kind of call a dark night. I don't know if you went through anything like that, but for me,
Absolutely.
you did.
Oh,
Okay.
yeah. Oh, yeah. But hearing you speak, I just want to revel in it because it's so beautiful. Like, so few people recognize what is so near and immediate to them, like your example with the windshield. And the dark night seems to come when you try to get it, when you try to understand what this is, or you try to reframe or reconceptualize this seeing, this sort of gnosis that's here, but not speaking to or about anybody. It's not speaking from a center anymore. You can't point to where its middle ground is and say, this is me and this is where I'm looking at it from. Like, you are that field of view. You are that awareness. And what's often said, and I know that you are aware of this, is that the seer cannot be seen. And so when you are able to finally rest and be able to acknowledge that, okay, I'll never get something called enlightenment. You know, getting enlightenment doesn't make sense. Either you rest as or abide in that, or you're constantly trying to get that. And those are the two sort of paradoxically simultaneous happenings. And so depending on which side of that you're able to abide in, either there's this dark night that seems to persist and needs to be re-reconciled within this, or you just rest as this. And the brain will continue to come up with challenges to that in your daily lived life. And yeah, I've experienced all of that as well. And there is a final burning off point. And it's funny that you say that all those 1200 pages that you read were just to get you to understand the immediacy of this seeing. And it's so true. And I'm not exactly sure why it seems that almost all seekers, besides maybe Ramana Maharshi or those, you know, those like some of those saints who just kind of let everything go all at once without much training or without much reading. But it seems the common experience that, you know, the seeking is almost a necessary step to realize that there never was a seeker and that all of that was just a movement within the immediacy of this awareness that's always been here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean that you there are some individuals without a lick of training, they've read nothing, who go from small to large in a second. And that can be a very disturbing, confusing situation for them. Others just take it entirely in stride and say, oh, okay, and kind of move on. Be all of that reading, you know, I Am That by Nisargadatta and other people, you know, studying that and trying so hard to understand his words. And then the cruelest of jokes is that once you're here, you realize that this is not made out of words. And therefore, words cannot land at that final destination. They are a representation and they're a dualistic representation, but they can never get to what is non-dual in that way. So, because it's not made out of knowing and it's not an object, right? So in the descriptions of everything that I read, there was never a clear description of what it is I was seeking. So if you ask, I think Adi Ashanti talks about this in one of his books, maybe Falling into Grace or the other, The End of Your World, that you could ask 100 people in a room who have been seeking for years and years and meditating what is supposed to happen at that moment. And you'll get 100 different answers, right? I would meditate, close my eyes, focus on the breath. In, out. One, two, three, four, five, back over and over. Okay. Something is supposed to happen. And when you get into happenings, right? Okay, well, what's supposed to happen? Right? That's the thing I'm seeking, right? That mystery happening. To the individual self, it is an addition. On the other side of the aisle, of course, like the candlesticks, the faces were always there, and therefore nothing happened. But that recognition is a happening,
The re
right?
yeah, the recognition is a momentary non-happening, but from this perspective, as you say, feels much a lot like a happening. And what's also interesting is it's not just a shift in perspective. It's not just a cognitive shift. You know what I mean? There is very much like an energetic kind of dissipation. You know, and that can be said to be a happening. A lot of people experience it as kind of like a kundalini energetic motion within the body, but there seems to be some sort of clearing out or dissipation of the me energy. And the me energy feels like a contraction until it's seen from the absolute perspective. And then that contraction that was so strongly held energetically within the me identity dissipates.
Absolutely. I think thinking of it almost like nuclear bonds, that when they're broken, right, it takes a lot to hold an object together. When those bonds are broken, you get this discharge of energy. I think sometimes we get so caught up. Maybe there are spiritual police that would come in and say that's not exactly right in this way. And we recognize that because language is dualistic. The moment we say something, we of course are moving away from the truth, and yet silence within that, there's no way to help other people. So we have to speak, and we have to stumble, and we have to commit these errors in the ways that we think about this. But I think it's okay to tell people that there is a happening. So we're staring at a perceptual puzzle. Somebody's saying, I'm going to point you towards something that I hope you will recognize. And once seen, cannot be unseen. Despite the fact that people have a back and forth where they may say, I lost it, right? And the veils, the ego, what we might call that, the entanglement back in thoughts is such that it can reemerge, reanimate, cloud, or obscure what's there, still there, right? Now, with a perceptual puzzle, it's interesting because once you see it, you can never unsee it. Somebody brought that same puzzle to you years later, you'd say, oh yeah, I see the two faces in that, right? Which can, so for me, that one scene, all of what was in the service of the ego for me evaporated in a second. Anxieties that have been deeply held for years of my life, day or two later, I was, this circumstance would get me anxious normally. And I'm like, I don't feel any anxiety. Oh, that's strange. How could it be that your entire life, my entire life, has been a lie in the sense that everything that I believed about myself that I took for granted, somebody says, who are you? What are you? I'm David. No, I'm not a proper noun. Right? What am I before you label me? Well, you're a human. No, that's another noun. You're an object. That's a noun. You're made of atoms. That's not. At some point, we go back to silence. We go back to a mystery. I don't know what I'm looking at.
But we point to that silence with words. And
Yes.
these words, these dualistic words, are a form of compassion because they do walk people home. They do walk people to their fundamental nature, that it's always here. And so it can be said that these words are all a lie. As you maybe you saw it, but I made a kind of a goofy little YouTube short saying non-duality is a lie, because ultimately all these words are a lie, but they come out of compassion. It comes out of a recognition that these words are necessary in order to kind of snap people out of their delusions and kind of show them at least point in the right direction of their nature that's always here. And in that is a calming, even if they don't go all the way to what's called liberation or enlightenment, even making incremental steps towards this fundamental awareness that is their their true nature that is always here. If they even take a couple steps here, things like OCD and anxiety, the things that like work with people with, and this is such a compassion, this is such a grace. Even a couple steps towards this starts to allow those things to dissipate, or at least allows people to recognize them and deal with them from a sort of less entangled point of view. And I'd love to hear more about what you do, because I know you, that you I looked through your website, and you run, how do you say your last name?
Cooler.
Kuehler. So it's the Kuehler Center for OCD and Anxiety, is that it?
Treatment, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful, by the way. We need more people like you, and especially people in those fields that are aware of this, because this is the ultimate liberation. All treatments are just treatments until you arrive at your true baseline nature. And
There is a conflict really between Western psychology, how we treat people, which is reorganizing the dream for them.
right.
And then on the Eastern side of that, recognizing that there is a place to step entirely out of that dream. And so on the one side, there can be this recognition of, could you step out of all of that and position yourself initially as the observer, an illusion that eventually also drops away, but at least that first step of as an observer,
It's a big step.
big step, well, the most important, I
It's the
think, is the
biggest step
first step.
towards peace, especially when you're in that entangled identity.
For me, Chris, I think I never understood that awareness, we'll use that word, was the creature that I was, right? That it's not that I am a human being with spirituality, but spirituality as a human, entirely the inverse,
Totally.
right? That idea for people who are suffering that they are not the experience they are having, right? Every I thought, every my thought of ownership over things, my possessions, my life, my thoughts, my emotions, my behaviors, all of that not seen just as the chirping mind. And recognizing there was another platform with an awareness to nestle themselves in, right? All of this kicking up so much dust, and then sitting right here, sitting, as you say, the width of a thought away, right? Sitting right there, right? And how frustrating is that for a therapist to recognize that the place that they need to be is that close. If they could step out of and say, whatever is arising in this moment, joyfully, curiously, effortlessly allow the dance of sensations, right? That after awakening, you sort of become those sensations, right? There isn't a person that claims ownership over phenomenological arising anymore. So what does, right? And over time, of course, the thing that does, the I that expanded from limited to limitless, still takes up a residence. Once you can direct people there, and some people do get it, at least they can take that first step to become the observer. And that puts distance, just enough of a gap that allows an intrusive thought about hurting a loved one, for example, to simply dance within that space. Now, can you get them to embrace joy? Could you actually get them to wave at it? Right? Which seems like a betrayal of the seriousness of that thought. Saying, yes, we want them to wave at it. We want them to learn how to shift their attitude so that this acceptance of, meaning no holding on to, no resistance of, slippery, Teflon, nothing for that thought to stick to, nothing for an emotion to stick to. I am sad, thought only. There is no I that is stuck to the sadness. There is only the arising of sadness, right? And within that, that's still a concept. But again, we make these concessions, just this arising, right? So to have therapists that know both sides of that aisle that can bridge East and West has been really critical to the work that I do. There are people who are very psychologically minded and love the idea of venturing out of the well-worn paths of Western psychology and say, well, 2,600 years on the other side of the aisle. It says, well, they have something to teach us.
That's so wonderful. I'm so glad that you're doing that. That's such a compassionate act, especially because it can be so hard to point to even just the observer, get people to understand that at least at this stage, they're just the witness. And so it's such a compassion to meet them where they're at, to understand that ball of yarn, that entanglement, and meet them there. Wherever they are in that ball of entangled identity, meet them there and gradually bring them along the steps to just the seat of awareness or the seat of the witness. It's such a passion. It's a compassion, and it's really what's needed. I really think, and of course this is just the story I'm telling, but I do believe that there's sort of an evolution taking place in humanity, and this is the next step for humanity to come to realize that they're not just their humanness. This humanness is a concept within their ultimate nature. And to get here, I think, is what's necessary to find and bring peace to Earth. This is a story I'm telling, and it could all be wrong, but there's an intuitive sense that's been fairly on point so far that this is what humanity needs. And so the more way showers, the more people pointing to this space, even if it's just to the witness consciousness, I think allows for a greater span of a greater sense of peace to come over the world, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I'm so happy you're doing what you're doing, and thank you for your contributions on the YouTube channel as well. I'm so happy to finally talk to you, because your comments there are just so on point and so nourishing to people really suffering the illusions of identity.
It is so hard. I think one of the things that drew me to your channel was just, Chris, how good you are with language. I think that when you have a strong command of language, and I think extemporaneously you shine in ways that other people don't, and it's using that language to be precise and to direct in ways. And people who are spiritual, people who are working towards this, can recognize each other quite easily,
right?
Because they feel that resonance in those words. And at a time when I was very deeply lost after awakening, where I just didn't know what was up and down, I didn't know what was happening to me. I could not get off a couch for a few months. I was sort of staring up at the walls, because the residual sense of self, the personhood, certainly did not vanish with that awakening. And I think that that's probably most people's experience, right? Mm-hmm. That they're, depending on the conditioning in their lives, the extent to which that can be still quite robust and can allow fairly destructive ego forces to emerge. And that's certainly what happened to me. There was almost an obsessive compulsive need to understand what was happening, what I should do with it, its meaning in my life, how to integrate it. There were so many questions. And I think people have this idea that upon awakening, there's an right? And somehow you are flooded. There's a downloading of information that makes you immediately wise. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen that way, certainly for me at all. Walking around and being within oneness was just so beautiful and mesmerizing. And there was an immediate attachment to it. I could have spent the rest of my life marinating in that space. I could not understand why I couldn't get off the couch and go to the gym or do other things. All of these activities that had previously been in the service of that ego, when chunks of it evaporated in that moment, it left one very bare and naked in that moment, a sense that there is no self-driving behavior any longer, and therefore, what now? How do I? And so, captivated within that space, I did not want to leave it. Then there are individuals like Jim Newman and other people who have a lot of YouTube videos about only this now, the apparent arising, nobody there. And they have gone from the self that is now occupying the broader limitless awareness. When that dies away, they can enter into a state of attachment to emptiness. There's just simply nothing, disembodied awareness, right? It's sitting there and becoming teachers there, saying this is the final resting place, and it is not, right?
I
But
agree
those
with you.
individuals are very hard to get through because they feel that they have arrived at the end. There's
There's a
almost
sense
no
of
talking them
security
out of
there.
that. There is a security there, right? And
There's a
then what
safety.
is that next piece? That next piece of freedom, right? This is where the Zen masters talk about, a turtle playing a stone flute kind of idea, right? That all thoughts, nothing sticks in that way. All combinations can be. And within that freedom, there's also attachment. So until somebody comes full circle back to just this that is not energy, is not oneness. A cup of tea is a cup of tea. A mountain is again a mountain. A bird is a bird. But not a bird wrapped in ideas and concepts and notions. A bird, the grass growing by itself, just that. Most people don't make it all the way back to the other side of that. So I found that really frustrating as I was going forward, recognizing, oh, people are giving me a lot of grist to be able to hone what resonates about what they're saying. And then what sounds like there are still stories embedded in that. There are still belief systems embedded in that that are very, to people who are paying close attention, they start to realize, like, wow, a lot of luminous teachers out there have not made it all the way to the end. They're still buying into certain notions. Subtle, you have to pay very close attention to it, but only this emptiness, this unqualified, not an object. What is this made out of consciousness? Yes, but that's still a concept and that's not the truth. Right? And so at the end of the day, what is? Right? And you said we can't speak. What are you? Nisargadatta said, right? Only what you are not. Process of subtraction. Used to say to people clinically, like, if we're building a life for them, we say there are two ways to sculpt an elephant out of clay. My favorite is to remove the clay that does not look like an elephant, right? And so, in that statue of David, it's carved within marble. So, my God, that statue was in the marble. He just had to figure out how to remove the marble that was not that,
It was
right?
there the whole time.
Yes, it was there the whole time, right? And so, in that's sort of what we're doing, right? That awareness is going from the separate self to the limitless is simply removing the marble that is not that. Chipping away, chipping away, chipping away. Somebody says, well, what's left? You wipe away all the contents of your mind. What is left? No memories, no thoughts, no images. What? And yet there's still a sense of beingness. Well, what is that? And the moment we say, what is it? We're back into dualistic language that it is a what.
You're
It's
looking for
this
an
versus
answer.
that, right?
You're looking
So,
for something identifiable,
yeah,
and there
and
is
it
not
isn't
that.
an object and yet can be perceived. It has no qualities
And
and
it
yet
shines at
somehow,
everything.
yeah, can be absolutely undeniably sensed. How can we sense something that isn't an object? After my awakening occurred in August of 2022. And since then, every day, still removing parts of the dream.